what you learn through that process is the culture, the values, the way they approach problem solving. And we, you mentioned it, we loved that about every person that we met from Ancoa. We walked out of the first meeting, you know, at the distillery. I'm not sure I told you dinner last night, I wasn't sure we were going to get a deal done.
Sure.
I knew I wanted to, but you got to be realistic in it. Because we had so much of the same path in terms of how our companies were built
yep.
over time, you know, the way we approach our people, the way we approach our customers, the way we approach transparency, you know, all those things were, those are things that get you really excited.
My name's Max Gagliardi, and this is Always Be Building. If you're watching this video, take a moment, hit the subscribe button on YouTube, or you can follow me on your favorite podcast app. Hope you enjoy the show. All right. Well, Brian, thanks for doing the podcast, I guess, as a podcast episode. You've been keeping me busy lately.
You keeping me busy as well.
Why don't you talk a little bit about what's going on? I think this will come out here soon, and it'll be after we announce it. So
yeah. Well, last week, we were fortunate enough to enter into an agreement to acquire, you know, Ancoa and all the great employees and great technology here. You know, we had been we'd been looking at the physical space, as people call it more broadly, for a long time. And if we had a wish list, if you can say that, of finding someone who did this in an unconflicted way, that
right.
was really important to us in terms of, you know, how we've been doing our business, you know, someone that could bring an incredibly experienced team to the table. We'll talk more about that, I'm sure. And then importantly, someone who had a differentiated product and ideally would be based in technology.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a difficult combination to find.
Right.
You know, lots of people do this in a way that, you know, conflicts.
Sure.
Not transparent, opaque, whatever word you want to put around it. You find a lot of that. A lot of people will say they can do it. Ancoa, having 13 people with over 300 years of combined experience, almost seemed mathematically impossible to us.
Yeah. maybe need to get a few younger
right.
folks, but
and
it's
what,
good.
What you all have done with Ancoa View and making revenue visible by product, by location, was really unique. Surprisingly unique,
yeah.
In fact. And so we're really excited that Ancoa is now a part of Aegis.
Well, we're excited too. And it was something that was unexpected, but it's been a welcome surprise. And I, you know, had heard of you guys a little bit, but I think in the last, I don't know, 5 years, how long have you been there? 5, 6, 7 years?
I started October of 17. So I just passed 6 years
okay.
as my full-time.
I was part
of the founding group going right. all the way back to 2013, but
yeah.
joined full-time in October.
And we can get into some of the origins of it, but I think the point I was trying to make is that the last 5 years or so, 6 years since you've been there, it's really accelerated. You guys are doing a bunch of just really cool stuff. And it was interesting because I think you heard about us through a client that we had, and Ryan Vail reached out, and then we met with you. And we weren't really looking to do anything like this. And not necessarily because for any real reason, just hadn't necessarily contemplated it. And it was a surprise, but also, you know, it felt good to say, hey, look, someone's recognizing that we're doing a good job. And I think that the people here, I hope that they've, through this process, have walked away with realizing that they're doing a good job. And like, we've, you know, created something that we didn't really, you know, it was two guys sitting in a cubicle that was, I think the simplest thing that we thought of was like, if we can figure out ways to help producers make more money, that was kind of just the basic thesis of the business, and in a bunch of different ways. And that has evolved over time with the technology and things. But at first it was really simple. It's like, we have knowledge. We think it's valuable for producers. How do we build a business around that? And in a way, I know that when you think about hedging, it's not necessarily making them money. It's more about a surety of what they're going to have into the future. And I'd love to hear, we'll get into Aegis and what you guys are doing, but just some of the origin story for folks, how you were involved. You mentioned it a second ago. Go into that, and then we'll kind of make our way to today.
Yeah, I want to go back to something you said, though, just before we leave it.
Sure.
Because, you know, we've had tremendous success with identifying companies that we would like to be a part of Aegis and doing it outside of what would otherwise be called a process.
Right.
Because we can be free from sort of the, you know, here's the steps and timeline and package presentation. Like we want to work a thesis. We want to find companies that fit the criteria. We want to talk to them individually, build those relationships. And then if there's a deal to be done, there's a deal to be done. And if not, there's not, right? And so that's a, you know, that can create a lot more work for us, but I think we get much higher quality assets when we are intentional about sure. the kind of company we want to be a part of. What you learn through that process is the culture, the values, the way they approach problem solving. And we, you mentioned it, we loved that about every person that we met from Ancoa. We walked out of the first meeting, you know, at the distillery. I'm not sure I told you dinner last night, I wasn't sure we were going to get a deal done.
Sure.
I knew I wanted to, but you got to be realistic in it. Because we had so much of the same path in terms of how our companies were built
yep.
over time, you know, the way we approach our people, the way we approach our customers, the way we approach transparency, you know, all those things those are things that get you really excited. You know what it is on the surface, but when you get underneath and you find common ground on those topics, you get really convicted on bringing organizations together. In terms of how Aegis started, you know, it was a really simple thesis in 2013 in that, you know, primarily oil and gas producers. And that's where we started. We're doing a lot more than that today. Still the core of who we are, that they're facing off with some of the most sophisticated financial institutions in the world in putting hedging contracts in place to protect their cash flow. And an oil and gas producer negotiating a complex derivative contract with a bank is not really a fair fight.
Yeah.
And so having someone in the middle of that transaction to help make sure it's the right tenors, it's the right volumes, it's fair pricing, so that people get a fair deal, was the very simple thesis on how Aegis began as a hedging advisor, rather than sure. a commodity trading advisor. And we built a great business around that. I was theoretically part of it, but Chris Kroom and Justin McCran and the initial team that they hired really were the people doing the work. And they built a great set of loyal customers is sitting in the middle of really an advisory business. When I joined in 2017, we saw a huge opportunity to apply technology to the problem in a different way. Some of it was just out of the sheer need to scale the business. How can we get reports out? How can
right.
we, you know, how can we get information to customers in a timely manner? And you start applying some technology. But once we started to really think about what was possible in terms of how do we show people what percentage hedge they are? Could we show them what that looks like versus the, you know, their peer sets?
Right.
You know, could we get, you know, mark to markets to in a more timely manner? Could we integrate market data? There were a whole bunch of relatively basic questions we were trying to solve. And that's evolved now into developing, you know, custom price indications for what executable prices might look like at a bank, or developing a true hedging marketplace, or building complex workflows, or building hedge recommendation engines that are built in really deep quantitative analytics. You know, it's amazing where we started, which was in Power BI,
right.
actually called Power Pivot at
sure.
the time, to run some of our very first reports when we were calling technology to where we are today. You know, it's kind of an incredible journey that we've gone in a very short period of time. And by the way, you know, we have a whole bunch of things that are coming still this year, and the integration of what was formerly called Ancova View just gets us really excited. We haven't seen people apply technology in that way before. And, you know, we'll always be known for our expertise. Everyone's going to say have the smartest people.
Right.
We certainly believe the same. But it's very easy to point to the technology as a massive differentiator, because it's hard to dispute that.
Yeah, and it's a supplemental thing that can be a standalone product for folks, which you guys have done a really good job of making that offering. And then you add in the expertise, and that's like the icing on. I mean, that's the meat and potatoes is the expertise, but then how do you enhance that and make it into something that can fit into something that everybody can use? And that's what was interesting with us looking at technology was a couple things. One, I think you guys saw this, was just all this incredible data that we're not doing anything with. Nobody was really doing anything with it. And our clients and us really ourselves struggled to wrangle that data in a way that made the process better, made decision-making better, and ultimately drove ROI, like real ROI, like making sure people were either paid correctly and getting, making sure they're getting the money that's owed, or making sure that they're benchmarking correctly, that they know that the deal that they're entering into. Again, it's one thing for me to say, hey, this is a good deal, this is our expertise, but when they can look at their portfolio of assets and really be able to see it and visualize it, just things like that. And it's stuff that we always wanted. And it's like, this isn't, I mean, it's hard. It's a hard problem. We're trying to solve hard problems, but it's not rocket science. It takes time. It takes expertise. It takes investment. And, you know, the similarities between you guys and what, you know, our journey has been, it's just, it's uncanny. I mean, it's two guys, right? And there's doing advisory, and they got into the execution part of it. And then they went and started looking towards technology. And I think that Mark and I have joked, and we've told you this, is that had this been other different opportunities, it probably wouldn't have made a lot of sense. But given what you guys do so well and what we feel like we do so well, fits together so good. It's like now there's this full offering where you can go to folks and really be able to sit down, listen to what they have to say. And there is something we can do as a combined entity now that will help them. It may be, you know, we could do A to Z. It might be this little tiny piece of it that might add some value, or it could be the full suite of things that we could do. But I think we can help a lot of folks. The other thing is that it's an all-in-one solution rather than having, you know, we always had hedging as something that people ask us about all the time. And we just, no, we don't really do that. There's some groups that are good at it. There's some banks that we could talk to, but it was a deficiency that we had. And so this makes all the sense in the world. And that was a big driving factor as we marinated and thought about it. It was like, this just, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I know we've thrown the words around a fair bit, but this idea that we have a full revenue management solution, when you can optimize prices that are received in the field, and that's added plus or minus to the hedge book, you really do have the entire view of revenue,
right?
You know, for an oil and gas producer in this case, that's really exciting because we start to put that information in the hands of our traders, our marketing analytics folks, you know, our ability to benchmark across, our ability to project revenues, forecasts, apply, you know, quantitative analytics to what hedges may make sense. I mean, those are really differentiated capabilities. And, you know, it's hard to argue that revenue is not an important part of an oil and gas producer or non-op or, you know, private equity sponsor who has the equity behind.
Absolutely. And I think that this idea that we can tie those together, which you touched on, but having something where, you know, you guys had this issue, I say issue, but this problem around, we've got the financial side, the hedging side. You're asking clients, hey, maybe send me some data. We can do, you know, we can, if we had your volumes, if we had this or that, it could help us get a better picture. We could project things. Whereas, you know, on our side, it's, we have all this data on the physical sales, but I don't know what they're doing on the hedging side, right? It's like, I think you're getting this price. This is what we sold it for, but I have no clue what you're hedged at or what your positions are. And so there was this kind of blind spot to where, you know, we could always ask folks on our end, or you guys could ask folks to provide certain data. But now there is a way, if someone did the full suite of services or the technology package, that they could really tie those together. And we're just going to take time to integrate some of that stuff, but all the pieces of the puzzle are there. I think we just have to put them together, which is going to be a really fun problem to solve.
You know, and I think it was the thing that really hit me going through the process, and love for you to comment on it. You know, I think we've tended to think about, you know, base product hub, less Waha, or, you know, you name the combination, right, of indexes that need to be put together that make up pricing. That's not even close to the entire story. And I think people will tend to look at that, but or think about that as how they're getting to their revenues. But as we started to think, see how you all are treating, you name it, gathering fees, fuel, right, surcharges. I mean, there's, yeah, you know, how many items on a
40 something things on a well that has rich gas, so has NGLs, liquids in it. There's all these different components. You've got all this, all these data points. Regular accounting systems, they just threw their hands up and, you know, basically cried uncle and just said, we'll just lump it all into one bucket. It's very difficult to take a traditional accounting system, make it fit with the information that they have. And so you get poor data. It's garbage in, garbage out. If you average all the fees into one fee, or you take all the NGL components, which are individual products, lump them together into one barrel, now you have this incredible data set that's been homogenized in a way to where if you're a decision maker, or if you're somebody that's in charge of doing reservoir engineering or analytics, financial planning, you know, relaying stuff to your investors, the only way you've aggregated it is in these traditional accounting systems. And so it makes it very difficult for you to make informed decisions, make sure you're getting paid right, and be able to parse that out. And so it's just a ton of different things that go into it. And I think the traditional marketing approach or commercial approach has been focused on that price you receive. But, you know, I don't know what it is, 90% or some huge percent of the value is eaten up, at least on the gas side. Oil, you know, the deducts are smaller and compared to the total price. If it's a $2 fee and oil is $80, it's a smaller piece of it. But at least on the gas and NGL side, I mean, you may have stacked rates or fees that are a dollar plus, $1.50, hopefully less if we negotiate it for you. But that's a huge driver of the value. So you may go to some marketing or commercial or some other firm, and they're talking about pennies or fractions of pennies on the final price you receive. And it's like, but yeah, but there's all this other margin that gets made or lost before it gets there. And so we can't work miracles. It's like I say, we're kind of like doctors. You can't do miracles, but you can help sick people. And so you can look at a problem and say, what can we do to make this better? And if we can't make it better, how do we give you the granular insights to at least understand what it is? And so moving forward, you make better decisions when you enter into those types of agreements.
Yeah. And as part of the diligence around this, you know, we had the opportunity to talk to a number of our customers, a number of, you know, right, Ancova's, you know, former customers. I was surprised, and I guess in a good way, that about the consistency in answering when you would ask someone, do you really understand how you're being paid in the field? And people will freely admit that they don't.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I really understood why that was the case, given the importance of revenue to an organization. But when you start to quantify, if a producer has 200 wells, and they're getting a statement on every well every month, and it's got 40 components to it.
Right.
I mean, the simple math is, okay, I've got 200 wells, I'm getting 24 statements, I got to go back and do the math
right.
But. So I've got 200 wells times 12 months, I'm getting 240 statements a year with 40 data elements on it. That's not even a terribly large producer.
Right.
You know, you're just talking about almost 100,000 data elements that have to be compiled in a way to make decisions, much less if you're, you know, we're talking to producers who are multiple thousands of wells.
Right.
And you see why this problem is so hard to solve.
Yeah.
You know, having someone keying data off of individual statements to try to make decisions on, you know, ethane rejection elections,
right,
you know, or why did my NGL yields change month over month? Those are, you know, producers all nod their head and say, yeah, this is a problem for us, just because there's not a way to consume that data, parse it into a picture that allows me to make decisions. And I know we've got a lot more we can do, but it's a really interesting start in terms of, you know, how you all built that technology.
It's a good start, and you guys have so much experience with the technology side and solving complicated problems and making them, finishing it to a finished, polished product that was really appealing to us, because it's like, we have this baby and we want it to grow up. And how do we best do that? So I think it's really exciting for the existing clients. I've talked to folks and been like, you kind of are hitting the jackpot here, because we're going to put a bunch of resources into this. And you got in early and believed in the product, and we're going to make the product better. And all those things you talked about are right. But then on the what's driving those statements are these incredibly long, complicated, non-industry standard contracts. If you have, you know, 200 wells, sometimes that may be one contract. If you're lucky, you've got in to do a newer play, you maybe did one agreement and you got all the wells flowing through that agreement. It's a little bit more simple, but I remember the first client that we had at Ancova, they were acquiring a bunch of assets in the Mid-Continent, and it was a bunch of legacy held by production wells. And there was over 100 contracts for this tiny amount of volume, because all these old legacy wells had these, you know, an agreement to them, and they all had amendments dating back to some of them in the 50s or 40s, even going back, some of them more newer vintage. But it was like just getting our hands around all those contracts, summarizing them, getting them into back then just a spreadsheet. So it's the statements themselves, but it's all the contracts. And so having those in the database, we're getting better at getting those in, summarizing those key terms, having those talk to the statements and trying to figure out a way, how does this talk together? Because you've got complicated agreements that are non-industry standard, and you've got all these different variables that are driving it. And when you multiply a tiny error across a reserve base, it can be a huge number. And payment mistakes happen. And we've talked about it before on a podcast we did on Vue, but it's not like nefarious. People aren't trying to you know, make pay you less than what you're owed. I think the midstream and the marketing companies want to pay the correct amounts. It's their best interest as well. Problem is they have the same problem too. And so it's something that I think that as we continue to develop the product, it could be a really cool tool for folks to organize their asset in a better way.
Absolutely. Switch gears for a second. I know you and I are equally passionate about, you know,
sure,
not being conflicted,
yeah,
and not being on the other side of our customers in,
sure,
in any way. Talk a little bit about how you see, conflict. I don't want that to come off as too strong of a word, but
sure,
you know, the transparency. Where can a producer get hurt by a lack of transparency?
A lot of different ways. I mean, I think if you want to start first with not companies that do what we do, but with just midstream companies in general, when you look at a contract, there's just a million, it's death by a thousand cuts. So it could be they're making money on the fuel, they're making money on the recoveries, they're keeping your drip or your condensate barrels. They could be, I mean, these are kind of hidden fees. And what we've noticed is that a lot of times when somebody who's, you know, not looked at these agreements in, you know, their entire career may focus on like the headline fee or something that's just kind of, that sticks out. Here's a term sheet, here's your fee. And when you dig into the agreements, you find that you're losing value here, you're losing value here. And we had a client that was like, hey, we got these two offers. And this is right when they were bringing us in. We think we're going to go with this one because the fee is 30 cents. And we're like, actually, it's like $1.30 because you're not getting your drip. They're making money on these recoveries. They're making money on these fuels. The pricing that you're getting is not, they're giving you a fixed price here. They're making a spread on that. And so they actually went with the other offer that was looked like a much higher fee. It was like 90 cents or 80 cents. But all those other variables, they were getting passed back value there. And just the person that was looking at it, no knock on him. This wasn't his background. It was just an engineering background or a land background. And he just kind of was like, well, I was just looking at the fees. And so that's one way where there's a lack of transparency. And I think the advisory side really helped to bring that to light. When it comes to peers of ours that do similar things in the marketing and the physical side, it's a weird category of companies because a lot of companies seem the same that do what we do, but they're not really the same. I mean, there's some groups that are truly market makers. So they trade and their job is to buy something at one price and to sell it at a higher price. And with that comes risk. And so I never want to knock on the market makers. They're vital. We need them. They're out there taking price risk and taking transportation risk, entering into these agreements, which then helps people that are closer to the wellhead, like our clients, not have to do that themselves. So if you didn't have these marketing companies or these trading companies, you would then be forced to take out that transport. By you, I mean the producer. You would be forced as the producer to go downstream and find the end user market. So it's a extremely vital and critical piece to the industry that makes it to where we have a lot more liquidity and it's easier to sell the products. If someone wasn't out there taking out space in Cushing or, you know, building like having, you know, gas storage fields and doing all these things, taking out transportation on downstream pipes, then that would be pushed further upstream and it would be a lot more complicated and risky for our clients to do that. So it serves a vital role. I think where the line's always been blurred for us and what was the original thesis to what we did was that we want to have unbiased and unconflicted advice. And so I really struggled with like, if I'm out trading and I have positions and I'm trading on my own behalf, then how can I like give advice that's in an unbiased way? If I have fees or margins that are hidden that my clients don't know about, how can I, it felt like that was something that when we looked at it at the very beginning, we're like, this just seems weird. It's like, you've got, you know, potentially a lot things that might not be aligned. Maybe they're not, maybe they are. I just can't tell you because I know that there's these things that could be potential conflicts. And so we always just said fixed fee, transparency, you know what we're going to get. We've probably made a lot less money over the years, quite frankly, because people see exactly what the fee is on the invoice and that just, you know, hits them every month. And so you're always under that scrutiny to be competitive, which is a good thing. Again, we want to be competitive. But for us, that was just a simpler model. It's like if you had all those resources in-house, what would it look like? It would look like what we've done at Ancova, except you don't have to hire all those resources in-house. You can have an experienced team. And Mark's read a ton of contracts. He's done a lot of deals. Everybody here has, but I'm convinced that collectively as a group, when we look at it together, it's a better product than just one person.
So I just want to play that back to you to make sure I understand. So you have there are people in the industry who will both give advice and be a market maker on the back end of that advice?
I mean, yes, that, you know, that's been kind of a traditional model. And to the you know, to the point that they'll make is that we're taking risk and, you know, yes, we make a margin, but that's because we're, you know, we're making these markets and we're taking that risk. And again, I think that's a vital role. The part that's always been blurred for me is, but you're also giving people advice and how do they know that that's not going to benefit the book that you're trading? They can say that it's not. I don't know anywhere contractually that they're saying that it's not. And I don't know that it's necessarily something that's against the rules. It's not. I mean, it's been the way that it's been done in the marketing industry for a long time. I personally never felt comfortable with that. And Mark's never felt comfortable with that.
Well, that's interesting because in the hedging business, we've had that. You could have that same dynamic, right? Market makers are everything in the hedging business. You have to have people who are willing to take that risk, right? On the back end. And they deserve to make a profit. I mean, they deserve to make a fair profit for their risk taking and for their efforts. And so, you know, we want them to do that. We want it to be fair. There's actually regulations in the financial business that prevent a market maker from giving advice. Dodd-Frank really put a bright line in there to prevent that for those exact conflict reasons. And it really introduced this role of an independent advisor to fill the gap in between, you know, who has the risk, where are they laying that off, and who can provide, you know, truly unconflicted advice in the middle of it. So it's just interesting to hear that same separation doesn't necessarily happen in the physical business.
It doesn't all the time. And it's a really weird and kind of blurred line too. It doesn't necessarily mean that a company may be trading your specific volume and making more money off your molecules than you are, that they're telling you are. They could be doing that. I think folks do. But I also think that it's something, you know, for example, if you know where somebody's going to be drilling, you know, and by the way, you told them to drill or to go to this midstream company. You said, hey, look, go to this midstream company. And by the way, there's only one outlet at the end of that plant and it's on this pipeline. And that outlet only has this much capacity. That's a blank check, right? Like you've told them where to go. You know where the volume is going to be. You know how much volumes they're going to be. You know when it's going to come online with some certainty. There's some risk there. They may pull a rig back or not drill as much as you thought. But in a large way, you have an asymmetry of information that even if you weren't using that gas to make a spread or to trade a book, you have information that the market broadly doesn't have and that you could then go take positions, take out that transport, and it gives you an incredible leg up. And so just that in and of itself, it's like they're handing over information that's extremely valuable. And I just don't think that, I don't think producers realize that that's going on or that that's what's happening. So it's an education thing. I think these conversations are important. And again, I hate to call out specific things that people are doing because again, I think the market makers are critical. I just think that sometimes there just needs to be a brighter line drawn as to what function that you're playing.
Or a producer or non-op needs to understand that and draw the line themselves, right? And that's a very easy thing to do, right? To have someone there to provide advice and then go out to multiple markets and make sure that they're being paid fairly. If that market maker is the best deal, great.
That's where I was going to go with it. It's like people will, you know, they'll say, hey, you know, we want to, we've got somebody that's, you know, providing this service or this other service, but what could you guys do? And we may go and say, well, what we'll do is we'll find out. If they're the best price and they're the best deal, then let's sell it to them. Like, absolutely. We want to make the best margin, the best price we can make, but we just want to find out if that's real or not, right? Like we want to make sure. And I think that in every space, in every basin, there are, you know, the top 10 or top half dozen, you know, market makers that are out there that we know hold a lot of the transport, that we know have good balance sheets, that we know are very competitive and that provide a great service. And we just want to make sure that those people that we know of are in the mix and in the hunt and that they get a chance to bid on something versus kind of doing something where you've just, you know, this person is a market maker, but you've kind of dedicated everything to them. And it's like, well, why don't we let's bid this out and make it more competitive? And I think that we're hoping to find ways to also incorporate technology to make it to where it's like, you don't take our word for it. Like, let's just map it out and show you your different options. We've got some stuff we're doing internally with our trading platform that we haven't rolled out as a standalone product that could be interesting in the future. I mean, you guys have done a really cool marketplace and maybe there's some things like that with gas and oil that we can look at doing. But the main thing is just making sure that the producer's getting the best price, getting the best market information that they can gather. And then we help them do that for a fixed fee that's transparent and it's cost effective for them versus going out and replicating what we built.
Great. So at the end of the day, it's all about delivering results for customers. It's what walk me through some case studies.
Yeah, sure.
On maybe let's talk about where did Ancova View make a difference for somebody? Where did a contract compliance review make a difference? What were some things you delivered in the real time? And we're sitting here a really cold day in OKC today.
Yeah.
Walk me through some case studies on how
the simplest case studies to explain are ones where we've caught payment errors. And this is even prior to Ancova View, just because we would do it back then manually. And we'd go in and we'd say, all right, like the first thing we're going to do is to try to assess what the company's portfolio of assets look like from a commercial perspective. And by those assets, I mean contracts and how they're getting paid. And we'll go in and we'll have the contract administrator brief the contracts, summarize them for us. Then we go in and we have our either commercial reps or our analysts or somebody go in and look at the statements and just try to start to tie it together. And now we have a more automated process of that where we streamline it. But early on, Mark and I found like a contract where we looked at it and we said, these are all varying gas quality wells. So there's like some of them are, 1200 BTU. And then as you moved across the field, some of them were 1400 BTU. And it got richer. The gas got more liquids as you move through the formation. And then we were doing the netbacks, just looking at it. And we're like, why is they're both getting paid $3. I'm making up the numbers, but it's like, this one should be getting paid like $4.50 because it's got more rich NGL quantity gas. And this one should be making $2.50, but it's like every netback is the same. And like that doesn't make sense. And so reached out to the midstream company and they're like, oh, well, we're just we're doing an MMBTU allocation, not a GPM by product allocation. And we're like, that's not right. Like, look at the contract. It says that, number one, that's scary from a royalty owner perspective, because if you got a royalty owner over here who's getting paid less than they should be, or a royalty owner over here that's getting paid more than you should be, that's one massive problem that we won't even go into that. But number two, it's just like, you should be getting paid correctly based off this agreement. And it was what we calculated about a 7-figure mistake that went back quite a ways. And their argument was they were actually keeping the drip. The contract said the producer got the drip. So there was like, it was some rogue accountant, basically, when we drilled down to it. It was like, well, this is how I interpret it. And, and then the CFO over there was like, well, I kind of agree with our accountant because they were making more money doing it that way. And we're like, no, but this is the contract and how it reads. That was one that was more on the egregious side of what was going on. But a lot of times it's just something small, like an escalator was calculated wrong, or a fuel was supposed to have a cap on it at, say, 4%, and it's getting charged 4.25%. 0.25% doesn't sound like a lot, but over a large volume, it could be material. And what we find is that more often than not, we are finding payment mistakes. And sometimes it goes the other way of the producer. Sometimes we're like, you got overpaid by a little bit. But if I'm a producer or an executive member, I would want to know my business and know whether I'm getting paid correctly. So those are some easy case studies. Others, like negotiating deals, we talk about taking kind a lot. We had a client in the Permian Basin that entered into a new large area-wide dedication to dedicate to a midstream provider. Pros and cons with that. Sometimes it's better to have more competition, get a couple midstreams in there. But these guys wanted to get after it and start drilling. They liked this provider. They said, let's just dedicate everything to them, which is a fairly substantial agreement. I mean, this is going to dictate not just your pricing, but pace of development. Like, is there performance language? Are they, guaranteed to come connect your wells? What happens if they don't? What kind of pressures are you going to get? Like, what happens if you can't flow the well? Are you going to have to flare it? So doing a large dedication like that can really dictate your pace of development and the economics of the reserve underground. And so much importance is put on that. But then sometimes people will enter into these things, not maybe vetting it as much as they should. And so we push for a lot of things in these agreements that we don't always get everything we want, but we want some performance language. We want it to be, hey, look, I'm going to dedicate to you. I'm going to say, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. What are you going to promise that you'll do back for me as the midstream company? And so the right pressures, the right well connect timing, what happens if I get curtailed? Can I get a release? Things like that. And one big one is like control of my products downstream. And so a lot of the groups who work for private equity in the past, they've been private equity. When their ultimate goal is to monetize, they want to flip the asset and hopefully go do it again. And potential buyers, these larger public companies, they really care about controlling that product downstream. Some of them have NGL marketing groups. Some of them take the product to go to LNG facilities to export it overseas. And so that's an important thing that you need to get. Whether you exercise that right or not, you should have that right in the agreement. And oftentimes, because it's not an economic impact today, guys will use it as trade bait. It's like, we didn't get the take in kind for NGLs or residue, but we got the fee 5 cents lower. It's like, well, yeah, but this is an important thing that, in the future could lose or create a lot of value. And so in this instance, we really pushed for, because it was such a big dedication and because they had such robust drilling plans. We're like, you really need these rights. And so they, it's not that important. We pushed to get them. About a year later, by the way, they'd ran like 6 rigs. They were getting after it. So their volumes just went up really high. And we started looking at the TNF rates. So transportation and fractionation is what they charge on NGLs to get it from the plant downstream to turn it into raw products. And we found, you know, we started looking at the market in general, and we felt like, you know, these TNF rates are pretty high on this agreement. We know kind of what the market is, and we thought there was some substantial savings. So we went to the midstream and said, you know, we want to explore taking in kind of our NGLs. And we went out for an RFP for that. Got the bids back in. It was like a 6-cent delta on TNF. So 6 cents didn't sound like a lot, but that's gallons, not barrels. So there's 42 gallons in a barrel. And if you're doing 10,000 barrels or whatever it was, that's a lot. I mean, it came out to something like, you know, tens of thousands of dollars a day at the current volume. And then they were ramping that up. And so basically, if we looked at it over a 5-year period, it was like close to $40 million that potentially they could get by doing the take in kind option. Ultimately, the pipeline wanted to renegotiate and try to keep the NGLs. And so, but it just turned into a huge value add for somebody that was a throwaway thing in a negotiation. They just said, oh, we're just going to throw this away. It doesn't matter. And it was massive. I mean, so those are some examples, and we could go on and on. But I think with the point I want to make from all this is that the whole point of how you can create any business, I think, is that you have to be able to give somebody more value than you're receiving in return for the service that you're providing. And so that's, you know, the simplest form, whether you're selling, whether it's J.K. Rowling and she's selling Harry Potter books, you're giving her $15 because you value reading that book more than the $15 that you gave her. Or whether it's Steve Jobs with an iPhone, it's like, I value that $1,000 less than the convenience that this makes in my life. And I think that for our services, it's fairly easy for us to point to the value that we can create. And it may vary depending on what we do is more than, you know, than the price that we charge for the services. And that's a really easy business when you really think about it at the end of the day.
Going to a different place here. So you and Mark Edge, the other co-founder of Vancouver, I know you all do your homework.
Yes.
You all went out and talked to some folks about,
sure,
about Aegis. I'm curious what you heard.
Yeah.
That had to be an important part of the decision. And do we want to join these folks?
Yeah. We heard good things. I mean, like the thing that the number one thing that folks told us immediately, and I think this is because you guys have done these deals where a lot of folks have access to your technology. You'll work with some groups and say, hey, we can do a deal where lots of folks in like, for example, in a portfolio could have access to our tech. And everybody, just the technology is amazing. Like everybody that I talked to, they're like, I don't really know anybody that well over there. If they weren't that familiar with you, because a few of them like had never really worked with you, but they're like, but I've seen their technology and it's incredible. The folks that had worked with you and that were working close with you, nothing but good things to say. Like if they'd have been, these guys are terrible and you know they suck, then that would have been a big red flag. But the feedback was very positive. The level of expertise, as well as the innovation on the technology, and I think the ability to do the full suite of things. Like some folks, like they just use the technology with you guys and it's a value added tool for them. They see value in executing themselves. They want to keep part of that in house. Other folks, they may just not have that expertise. And so the ability for you guys to kind of say, very similar to us, like we can do A to Z, but if you just want LMNOP, like that's great too. And we have that solution. And so that's what started getting us excited, because there've been times where, you know, we'd talk to a client and I don't know if I can justify this. And we talked to him too. What are you doing for hedging? Well, we need to get on that. We've been using this bank. And so then you start to think of it together with the feedback we were getting from the people we talked about you guys. And it's like, well, if we could bundle these offerings in a way that could really just complement each other for what we're doing. And so it was the feedback that we got from folks. And obviously they said positive things or we wouldn't be sitting here right now. But it was the feedback. And then it was the getting our gears turning around what the potential marriage could be in terms of like the combined offering.
Yeah, what struck me when we were talking to your customers, now our collective customers, but customers of Vancouver, almost all of them could point back to a specific moment where their loyalty to Vancouver was really formed. One really highlighted that you all did work for them really for free during Uri. They were using using a competitor, as a matter of fact, who wasn't really available for them. And you all stepped in and helped them navigate an incredibly complex time. They ended up becoming your customer, and right. I think we'll forever be a customer of Aegis as long as we continue to serve them. Another highlighted that you once you all told them, hey, you shouldn't hire us for this. This is a better deal
right.
for you to go with this different option. We can't touch that price. And that really resonated with him, that we can trust the advice that we're...
That one was a lot of money that we could have made on that, right? I mean, you're talking... It was a big package of gas. I know which one you're talking about. And it just didn't make sense for them. It was like, hey, look, this is an incredible deal that we were able to negotiate. And the counterparty has great infrastructure that they can get you access to something premium. And they're not going to charge a fee. And it's actually a premium to what you could get if we bid it out this other way. So just do it because it's great. And it's funny that... those hurt, but at the same time, you feel good for the client
right.
because you're like, that's great.
If you do the best thing for the customer right. every time, you're gonna win in the end. And obviously, we had some people who loved the technology. They just thought, you know, what had been done with the technology was incredible. And others who said, look, don't lose focus on the expertise. You know, what we really value from Ancova is they understand the basin
right.
in detail. They understand, you know, our needs. They understand how to work with the markets. And while technology will certainly always be important, don't ever compromise the expertise behind that. And I think that's really good coach. That's how we would approach it anyway. But it was just good to see people valuing every part of the offer that you had, and to be able to point to specific moments where, you know, they formed a real loyalty to the people here.
One thing I'll say about, because I want to flip, you asking me here, I'm going to flip this back on you a little bit, but what was surprising, at first I didn't realize it, but when I talked to folks, overwhelmingly positive feedback about you guys. And then what really was surprising to me was just you, it's grown into a pretty robust organization. You have a lot of clients that you're serving, and the fact that you score so well when you survey your clients around how they would recommend you to somebody else. And then you think about it in, you know, we're getting to that tipping point to where we need to get more operational things in place, because in the past, it's always been in my head or Mark's head and our people. We just know what the client's doing and what's going on. But talk some about how your background, you've done a lot of interesting things, and then you came into Aegis and you've helped it grow. And the operational, just, I mean, I hate to use the word excellence, sounds cheesy, but the operational excellence that you guys have and to be able to serve the clients in the way that you do, given where you've grown to, I think would be important for folks to hear, because maybe something that might scare clients that have been with us when we were smaller is that what if they grow and get bigger? Can you maintain that level of service? So what have you guys been able to do to keep that up?
Yeah, lots of different ways to answer that question. But I'd start with focusing on the team that we've assembled at Aegis, because I think that's probably the best way to go into that. You know, We were formed by people who knew, in this case, oil and gas inside and out. Every part of the value chain on the physical side, the financial side, we had traders, we had market analysts, we had people who'd worked at much larger companies, you know, all were a part of the team when I walked in. And I was incredibly proud of that, on how deep our expertise was and
right.
still is. I mean, that is core, that's core to it. I knew very little about oil and gas. I knew my car drove when I turned it on.
Yeah.
I knew the stoves lit up. I lived in Texas. I knew enough about oil and gas to be dangerous. My expertise was somewhere completely different, and that was in how do we advance an advisory business, which is what Aegis was formed at. By the way, that my prior company was formed as an advisory business and transitioned into a, you know, really top notch technology firm that was underpinned by great expertise. And that was a 20 year full transition,
right?
You know, to build that out, I think we've moved a lot faster at Aegis, but being able to step in and look at problems in a different way and say, all right, this is our customers value this. I believe we can increase the value we provide to them by adding this, and that's gonna create a bit of a flywheel effect for us where we continue to advance forward. You know, if we're going to do that, then we need to bring in people who know technology and user experience.
Right.
We need to bring in people who know about how to set up operations and run it like a scaled company, sure. repeatable processes, controls, metrics, et cetera. We're going to need to bring in a sales and marketing force, on people who know how to tell that story and, put together, the right documents to advance that. We're going to need to continue to, build out our hiring practices to recruit those entry-level traders and entry-level market people and entry-level customer success people so that we can build a pyramid of an organization where we're developing young talent to come in mm-hmm. and be able to, to run this business over the long term. Just all of those things became, we had to hire compliance resources. We had to, hire a head of corporate strategy and development to think about what acquisitions might we need to make? What investments are we ultimately going to make? We're in the process of making a 7-figure investment in our underlying CTRM platform, so we can continue to advance our capabilities in the manufacturing markets today. Manufacturing markets weren't even on our radar
right.
in 2017. But as you think about the agricultural exposures, the fact that they put diesel in their trucks to ship products different places, they have exposures to bunker fuels, they move their product overseas, they have exposures to foreign exchange, and certainly those with debt have interest rate exposures. We could have remained, an incredibly focused oil and gas company, but, we believe that the service and the technology that we provide, transcend industries. And you've got to bring in a full team of people to be able to do all of those things simultaneously. And so, I think as we sat down in our first conversation, we started to paint that picture a little bit on, look, you can do this. There's no doubt that Encova could have done it on their own. How long would it take? What people are you going to have to hire? What investments will you make? Because we've got a lot of resources, and hope I think we've already seen that here, even in the first week,
yeah.
Post-close, that we can bring to bear to really accelerate the transition. So you tell me if you've seen that, but
I think
what we have now is the deepest people in oil and gas on the planet, the deepest people in the metals complex on the planet, people who are deep in the refined products, space, and a set of resources in technology and sales and marketing and compliance and corporate development, that can really, that really are additive to the people so they can stay focused on our customers and continue to build their expertise.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, that was, it's been apparent, just little things, going from at the beginning of this business, being the person that's like, taking out the trash, ordering the coffee pot, getting the kitchen supplies, doing the accounting. I mean, I'm talking year one to where we are now. I feel like today, prior to this this deal that we've just done, I felt like we'd come a long ways, but there were still just a lot of things where, hey, I want this thing done. I'm probably going to be the one that has to do it, or we have to delegate to somebody. Everybody's very busy. How long does it take to get done? How efficient is that? Just decisions on hiring, decisions on scaling, making investments in the tech. I mean, and just stuff that like people take for granted at bigger organizations that when you're in a smaller organization, I think you talked about it last night at dinner, which was going from being at a bigger company and being in management to then being in a smaller company and having to think about all these things. And all these things that I have had to think about for a decade, I can already see a pathway to where it's like, well, that person has that handled. Or this person over here, they're focused on that. That's really great. And by the way, not only are they focused on it, they're pushing me to be like, hey, we need to get this done. Can you help us facilitate it? I'm not gonna have to do all of it, but it's actually keeping me accountable in a way because I know they've got it handled. So ultimately the sausage will get made over there, but I still have to be, get them the part that they need. It's good in two ways. One, because they've got it handled, and two, because it's like keeping you accountable and knowing that like, hey, this is going to get done. And if it gets buried in my inbox, someone's pinging me and being like, we have to get this one thing done because we have this initiative. And it's like, that's kind of refreshing to have not the buck stop with you for everything. And when you first start, it stops with you for everything. And where we're at, it's still relatively small. Now the company will be, with this combination, how big, how many resources of people we have?
I think we're just over 85 today. Obviously with a hire that we put in the queue and
brought
to the table, I think surprised people how quickly that, you know, we brought in another person we may add to the team here.
Right.
Just because, again, it's part of the process, right? That, you know, this is what we need to get done. Someone's on it. Here's what pre-screening looks like. And they're bringing us a candidate who was a rock star.
Right.
And you didn't have to post a LinkedIn job posting and, you know, go out into the market and start tapping your friends. Like, person showed up at the front door who was super qualified and likely to be a one interview hire. But yeah, that, I think a lot of founders, just a bit of a different topic here, you know, that as long as they it takes them too long to realize that as long as you're the person who, you know, has to make sure the snacks are stocked and writes every presentation and approves every decision and, you know, posts everything on LinkedIn and has to write the website and has to book travel. And I mean, you name it, there's a thousand things you could put on a to-do list. As long as you're the only person who can do that, you're the only person who can do that.
Right.
And that's a big step when people start to understand that my time is most valuable focused on this. And there are going to be people who are excellent at doing all of these things, and let's put a team around it. And to make those investments early on is hard, mm-hmm. because it's hard to understand what the return is early. And so we still see many of our competitors who are built with people who are incredibly smart, right? Lots of really bright people who understand, you name it, oil and gas or interest rates or, you know, whatever the product may be. And they haven't built the infrastructure that allows them to really, you know, invest in the business in a way that brings new capabilities to customers. They will always be smart people. We'll never take that away from them. But bringing new and differentiated capabilities over time to match what's happening more broadly in the market, that they have a harder time doing that because they just don't have the requisite skills, you know, to kind of see around the corner, make the investment, allow someone to run with it, go out and facilitate an acquisition, you name it. There's a hundred reasons why. And that's an important part of growing a company. And once you've seen that at scale, you understand it, and applying it to a company that, look, I don't know, we're that small anymore. I think we're small when we had 8 or 9 or 10 people. But it's really nice to have a team in place that's just thinking about our customers every day from different lenses and bringing those capabilities to bear.
Well, you're talking about a scaling, and I think Mark and I, and efficiently doing it, as two different things, because you can scale and limp along, but doing it efficiently and proactively is one thing. So the two things Mark and I have always said that were the hardest were scaling and pricing. I don't know, for whatever reason, those are like the two hardest things. Because they're not an exact science, right? I mean, like, what may seem like a really great deal, and we're like, it's so much work, and we're going to give this fee, and someone's like, that's too much, and we're like, but this is all this work, where someone else may not bat an eye. So pricing's always been hard because you want to serve the client in the best way, but you want to be able to provide the service in a robust way where you're not cutting any corners, and some assets are more difficult to manage than others. And so that's always been one over the years where we're always like trying to come up with a formula or a calculation to really hone in on how do we price things, and that's always been tough. Scaling is the other one, making these decisions before they need to happen. And, you know, Mark said it, I've said it, but when you think it's time to hire, it's too late. You should have already hired. That's easier said than done. You can say that all day long, but it's like this leap of faith. It's like doing the trust fall. You got to fall backwards and just know that the arms are there to catch you. And as a business owner, you have to believe in yourself and in the business because you care. I mean, at least we've always cared about our people. We care about their success. We care about all the folks here. And want them to succeed. And so you know that these decisions are important for the business. And so it's something we've never took lightly. But I think a lot of founders, and I've been guilty of this, are too hesitant. It's like funny because I'll be like a lot of self-belief around a lot of things that we do, the service we provide, you know, all the people that we have, but then you'll hesitate around, should we make this decision? I mean, even this last year, we saw the reception of the technology and it was really good, but you know, we're worried about all these other things, price, gas prices, what if there's a recession, all this stuff. But it's like, read the writing on the wall. People are asking for the tech. You need to make these investments and these decisions. And so sometimes you just have to have the experience. And what did Mark say last night? The difference between knowledge and wisdom. Have the wisdom to know that things are going in the right direction and then being able to do it in an efficient way and scale it. And you guys have clearly been able to get there Certainly in the last 5-6 years since you've been there, I mean, the growth has been pretty awesome. And the service level increases have been awesome too.
Yeah. You mentioned the customer surveys before. It's something we take, we believe in net promoter scores. That's just to me, right. would you recommend Aegis to a friend or colleague? That is the key question
in
net promoter scores. And, you know, we had the opportunity throughout the year, over the last couple of years, to survey all of our customers. We've seen continual increases. We saw an NPS score over 60 this year, which is a world-class score, no matter the industry, no matter the product. And that's something we're really proud of. It's always, you never know exactly why someone scores you the way they do. But, you know, if we continue to put great people in front of them, we continue to put great technology, we show that we're continuing to invest in new capabilities, you know, we're investing in the relationships, those things tend to work out. We don't need to tie it back to any one of those, but if we do all of those well, you know, we're going to create a lot of customer loyalty. And at the same time, we still pay attention to the negative comments way more than we do the positive comments. I wish my brain wasn't wired that way necessarily, but you know, if someone wants something to be better, we need to take that seriously.
Well, that's how you know you care, right? I mean, like if it's eating you, I mean, that's always me. It's like there's times when to this day, it happened 6 years ago, whatever it was, where something happened and I felt like a customer wasn't happy or we lost a customer. Something just happened that it didn't go the way that I would hope that it would have went. I just wear that forever. And I'm always like, it eats you alive. But that's hopefully a good sign that like that means that you care and that you're trying to do the best and that, you know, you're giving the business the attention that it should have, and which you want everybody to be happy and giving you that rating that says that they would recommend you. Real quick to shift a little bit, what about the vision for, you know, the perfect, we got this done, we're doing a lot of exciting things and we're full steam ahead on integration, you know, planning on making the current processes better for the existing clients, also adding new clients. What's a success look like for you with this, you know, in the next year, the next 5 years?
Well, what gets me really excited about, you know, now having physical capabilities and differentiated physical capabilities. We could have gone out and found lots of people who can go, you know, market molecules,
right?
And there's hundreds of those organizations out there. But do that in an unconflicted way with an experienced team with differentiated technology, literally that doesn't exist anywhere. I'm really excited. We're still 5 days away from announcing this as we sit here today. You know, to be able to have conversations with existing customers who we built trusted relationships with, where we get to introduce this to them, right? As an added service to enhance, you know, our overall capabilities with the technology integrated, et cetera. We haven't made a habit of really bringing, not acquiring new capabilities that we can bring on at scale, right? Obviously, we've built out our technology. You know, we've added various things along the way. We, you know, bought emission advisors. We did some environmental, you know, or do some emissions work for our customers, you know, so that's been fine. But this is a full-on new service offering, you know, that's very differentiated. And to be able to walk into 350 trusted customer relationships and sit down and talk about how this is going to be additive to the services that we've done gets me really excited. Now, how many of those will want to go with us early in that journey or later? I don't know, right? We know some people have marketing teams in-house. We know some people have long-term relationships with third-party marketers. You know, there's a whole bunch of circumstances. We still think we can help from a technology perspective, you know, but I think if we walk out of this first year, you know, with, you know, 30 of those customers who bring us in to add, add marketing capabilities,
right,
whether that's through technology, through services, I think that's a terrific testament to this was a real value add. Over the next 5 years, I hope that number becomes 200, right, or 250. But we're going to go where our customers need us to be. But from my perspective, this really cements a full revenue management solution in oil and gas. Mm-hmm. And that is something we will be incredibly proud of, that we can see the revenue front to back. It also allows us to, you know, continue our focus on how we might apply this to other industries.
That's where I was going to go next, the next question. That was literally it.
I mean, I think, anybody that's a producer of commodities has this exact same issue on understanding how they're paid. That's going to apply to agriculture. That's going to apply to metals and mining. You know, anybody who is producing commodities is going to have a similar issue. And freeing up the space to think about how do we apply what's been built here, you know, into other industries, you know, leveraging the same technology, I think is incredibly exciting.
Yeah.
You know, taking front to back from, you know, where we're going into or what's being put into the ground, what's coming out of the ground, and ultimately monetizing that product. I just think we're going to see a, you know, I don't think that's an oil and gas only issue. It's anybody who's a producer of commodities. And so, you know, being able to build that onto our platform and support other commodities, you know, I think there's a lot of runway there.
I agree. And I think you probably have to catch a flight here in a minute, and we've gone here for a little while. But one of the things that we haven't talked about at all, that I'm one of the more exciting things is just the level of talent on the research side and the macro side that you guys have. And it's like kid in a candy store for me. Right? I'm going to meet Matt and his team and see some of the research you guys put out. And I'm like, I told you the other day, I'm like, people, you know, you guys give a lot of stuff for free. It's, what you show for free is not what everybody gets. It's a client, right? I mean, you guys are giving out stuff on your website. But I told you, I was like, the stuff you're giving away for free, there's newsletters that charge tons of money just to get access to this kind of information. And man, that's just such an exciting resource to have. I know our clients will be very excited because they'll come, you know, we have the macro takes, but we've always been more micro focused on actually at or near the wellhead and then to the market. But people get the questions about the macro forces. That's a huge investment that you guys have made, because those aren't necessarily employees or resources that you can probably tie directly to a specific client. But maybe you can if that's what they hired you to do. But man, just talk about that team and like the investment that you guys have made there, because that's like a luxury to have that, to have those deep expertise.
It is. We are very fortunate to have an incredibly deep, what we call market analytics team. And at the same time, I'm going to turn it back and say why we're excited to add capabilities on physical. You know, financial hedging and physical really have similar but different aims, right?
Right.
You know, a lot of time, well, in fact, most of the time, we're not looking at what's happening today, right? That's not our focus. It's what do we expect to happen over the next, maybe it's quarter, it's more likely year, 2 years, 3 years. We have people putting hedges in 2026 and 27
right
now. So we're looking way out at what the macro factors are to help provide guidance to our customers on how they need to be thinking and locking in prices for the long term, right? So that they're protecting at least some level of their future cash flows. And so we've had a pretty long-term focus, and we have people who are the best in the business at looking at, you know, what's going to impact that. What I love, and by the way, we've put the infrastructure in place so that people can access that information 24 hours, 7 days a week. They can also call our team and have deep, detailed conversations, but really they log on to, you've seen our technology, and they can go by basin, by product, and that's going to be, you know, whether it's certainly oil and gas we're talking a lot about here, but our environmental research and biofuels and you name it, it's all available all the time. We hold ourselves accountable for having a point of view all the time. And, you know, backing it up with a factor matrix and all the details that sit behind it. What I love about what's already starting to happen on that research is how are we also going to advise on what's happening today?
Right.
Sitting in the meeting earlier talking about the winter weather that's rolling in through Oklahoma right now is fascinating to me, because that is, our customers want to know that too, right? And so to be able to have a point of view on what's happening with pipelines and how are people thinking about, you know, curtailing production and all those sorts of factors that are happening today.
It's topical.
Right. or like people really do care about that. And so as we tie those things together and always on, you know, research module that's thinking about everything from what's happening today all the way out through 2027 with all the data and details behind it, that's a really good additive function. But again, those are the kinds of resources that you have to invest in, because they're the people who of course they keep you familiar with the markets, but the questions we get from our customers on, you know, whether it's, hey, we're thinking about drilling in XYZ basin, how do we think about, you know, locational differentials or basis or those sorts of things now, what kind of access to, can I get the pipelines and can I get my production out? You know, those are very real important decisions in diligence processes, et cetera. And to have, you know, have our team that's already super experienced combined with, you know, the folks from Ancova, I think just provides a really unique view both today and, you know, years into the future on what's likely to happen. Now,
yeah.
we should clarify that. We don't know what's going to happen with price, because if we did, we wouldn't be doing this business. But we can start to model out scenarios and talk about the factors that are likely to influence it. And, you know, everybody in this business is bullish.
Right.
Now, you wouldn't be in it if you weren't bullish.
Yeah.
You know, but our I think our ability to at least provide a set of facts and circumstances and models and things that give people the ability to have some level of confidence.
Right.
You know, that's a.
Yeah, give the best answer you can get with the information that you have and the expertise that you have. And for us, it's like things like you mentioned about pipeline capacity. It's like people will say, well, what's the capacity in this area? I'm like, that's the most loaded question. It was like, well, you mean compression capacity, pipeline capacity, LNG capacity, frat? You know, it's like, how far do you want to go? I mean, so it's, you have to say, okay, with the parameters that we've set for the question that you've asked, if here's the answers that we know today, and if we don't have the answer that you want, we have the expertise to find that answer, and we can do that. And you guys have it on the financial side, and we can, or at least give them the best answer that's available with all the information we have, and we can help with it on the physical side. And so, look, I mean, I think even from like a having the transparency and being able to make a better hedge, just because you know exactly what, you know, what your basis index price you're getting, or just all this clarity into those things. And what's happening on the physical side, I think, makes the hedging better just in general. So it's a cleaner hedge, as I would say. So lots that we could cover, and love to do more of this too.
Just for posterity, because I want you to always have this. What was the moment you decided that you were going to move forward with Aegis?
I don't know.
You and Mark thought about it a lot.
I don't know that there was like a specific moment. I think that it was... I mean, it was a combination of things. I think it was kind of a whipsaw of, I mean, I think the natural tendency as an entrepreneur or somebody that has a company is you want to bet on yourself, right? So you see the opportunity and you say, okay, well, here's the pros. This could be cool. This is a good aspect of it. It solves maybe this problem. It alleviates this other thing. And then you'll whipsaw back the other way and you're like, yeah, but like, you know, I can't. It's like, that's like, if you don't have that attitude, then you're probably not built to do this anyways. You know, you want to bet on yourself. And so, the hardest thing for me is that it's not that like this has been my baby, because it has been. It's just that I love what I do and I enjoy it. And I love the people that I work with. Mark's been a great mentor, almost like a father figure in a lot of ways. Like we act like father and son half the time. Love the people that we work with. I love our clients and I love what I do every day. And so just the prospect of changing that in the future and not knowing what that could be. And so that was the initial uncertainty, was like, how does this change? What does it mean for the future? And then as we learn more about the company, learn more about you and the other people, the management team, I think a big pivotal moment was everybody coming in and meeting however many weeks ago, months ago that was, and talking and brainstorming. That was pretty energizing. I think you could feel the energy and the excitement with the executive team. And then I was very impressed by the caliber of folks that are there that you've assembled. So that was something that started to get me pretty fired up. And at first it was, you know, you kind of go through the pros and cons, like I said, but then the pro, it starts getting more things added in the pro column. So I don't know that it was like a one aha moment. There was multiple moments when I was like, I think we should do this. And then times when you kind of flip flop, but ultimately you have to trust your gut. I mean, a lot of what you do in business is you kind of have to trust your gut, for better or for worse. Sometimes it ends up being, and I think no matter any decision you make, you'll always be like, what if I did this? Or what if we did that? But ultimately you trust your gut and you go with it. And then, you know, probably a few weeks before it got really serious, you kind of make peace with it. You're like, all right, this is a decision I think I want to make. And at that point it goes into execution mode, right? You sort of have to cross over at some point. And then when it did, it was like, I was getting excited. I've always been somebody who's like, rush and let's do it. Mark's always been more kind of like, pump the brakes, let's think about it. So there's a good yin and yang there. But Mark's also somebody that, so funny, because he's very resistant to change. And I've told him this isn't something he obviously can watch this, so he'll see me, but this is not something I've said to his face, but it's like, he's very resistant to change, but he's one of those people that when he does make that switch over, he's like so good at it. And he becomes, you know, 110%, and he's really good operationally and making sure that it gets done once it switches over. And so, you know, we've had a lot of step changes in the past. Like, we had minority investor in one of our businesses and we started, it didn't really work out good. But once it got in it, we said, hey, we're going to make the best of it. We had a private equity money that we raised for another venture, which is a different mindset because you're kind of working for them and it's not truly your thing. But in all these different things we've done, the thing that Mark's always been great at is that once we make the decision to do it, he's all in and he's really good at the operation side. And so I could see it starting to change into him. And when he became, okay, this is what we're going to do. He's bought in. And the other yesterday he said, well, this is starting to feel energizing. It's getting exciting. You know, this is going to be a new challenge. And I think part of the attitude for the skepticism and his hesitancy is that he's trying to negotiate and wants to, he doesn't want to let his brain switch over to that other side because he wants to stay in that mindset of like, this is a negotiation. I'm trying to get the best deal, not just in this type of engagement, but also just for our clients. I mean, that's been his whole career and what he's tried to teach and mentor to me is that, you know, how do you negotiate smart? How do you fight for what's best for your clients? Get them the best possible deal. And so long-winded answer of saying it was a whirlwind of different things to think about, but we're excited about it. And I kept saying it for weeks, but I'm ready to get to the fun part. Like we're in the fun part. I mean, there's so much stuff to do right now. It's crazy. It's a good thing. I mean, like I was glad you got to sit into the operation type meeting today because that's incredibly important. I know we're talking about integration and marketing stuff like this, get the word out. But hopefully you got a sense to see that we're doing a lot of cool things for the clients. We've got a lot of work going on. And so when you combine all that with all the new initiatives, there's gonna be a lot of fun stuff to work on.
Completely agree. And we tell our people, and I was having a conversation with Cheryl earlier, you know, number one priority is always take care of our existing customers.
Right.
And in this case, we get to do both. We get to take care of our existing customers, bring them new capabilities. We certainly are talking to new customers almost every day.
Right.
But we just can't lose sight of that. You know, serving our existing customers, the ones that have trusted us, the ones that have grown with us, you know, that is always job one. And to the extent we serve them well, we're going to get a lot of opportunities to grow both with them and with, you know, customers, you know, prospective customers who talk to them. And so I think we share that mindset.
We do. I mean, you guys have, you know, in our businesses, both of us, we in the oil and gas space, at least, maybe not in some of these other industries that you guys have started to branch out into. But in the oil and gas industry, there's a lot of churn. There's, you know, people buy and sell. And that's always been a headwind for us. We don't hide that. It's like, hey, you got a great client. They get super successful. It's like, uh-oh. Like then, you know, they go and sell. But I think the testament to what we've done, I think what you guys have done is that they come back. It's that, you know, you do a good job for somebody and you execute. And then when they're going to do that next thing, it may be with that same company, it may be with a new group, but they call you back up. And so that's how you know, that's the satisfying part that you know you're doing something right. And so if we can keep executing, then it's really not much to worry about because there'll always be something to do. That's what we've always joked about over the years. It's like, we'll be busy doing something. I don't know how big or how small it'll be over time, but there'll always be a need because if getting back to that thing of creating more value than you get back for yourself, if you can do that, then you have something to do. And I think we have lots to do to create value for folks. So.
Absolutely. Well, we're really glad, Max, you and Mark, you know, made the decision to be a part of UGIS. We, you know, a lot of times people are focused on how are we going to save money and cut costs. Right. And I think all of our time has been spent on how are we going to be, you know, get ramped up to take on, you know, all this new work. And so, you know, the 13 colleagues all coming over from Ancova, we couldn't be more excited about that. You know, really impressed with what you built. It will always be your baby.
Yeah.
And we're going to, you know, help raise that child together and, you know, turn him into a responsible adult and, you know, do great things.
Well, I appreciate it. And I hope that you said it a few times and I really appreciate it that the people here, cause like people ask me all the time, like, how do you do these things? And you got all this stuff going on. And it's like, I don't, I mean, it's the people around here that really doing a lot of it. I mean, obviously we're trying to guide the ship, but you know, a lot of what I've done here is administration and origination are my main focuses, but the people here are making a lot of it work. And so a big thing that was exciting for us is to see them flourish and grow in new ways and get new opportunities. And I think some of them, or all of them, hopefully, but for sure, some of the people here, I think, are going to be challenged in new ways and it's going to be fun to do it. So Absolutely. You got to run soon. I don't want this to be the last conversation. I would like to do more media. I enjoy this stuff. Feels like you kind of do a little bit too. This has been like a pump up the company talk, which is good, but lots of interesting stuff to talk about. I'd love to, as we accomplish some of these things that we're trying to do, get back on and talk about that. And even like talk with other industry folks too. I mean, you've got a ton of expertise and so does your team. So let's not make the media thing a shy deal. Let's get out there.
Love to.
All right. Well, it's good. It's good starting this out. I'm glad we got to memorialize it and do this. It's hard to do, but thank you guys for tuning in. Hopefully you found this found this interesting, but Brian, we'll get back to work.
All right. Thanks, all right. Bye.